This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Live from Seahawks training camp, powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
That is exactly right. We are live at Seahawks training camp. In fact, we're the only ones here, and we have worked off at least 3 to 7 pounds each today so far, Dave. I think training is going well.
Yeah, I think we're suffering more than the players did, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a little warm. We've got side panels on our tent here for restriction purposes, but not getting much of a breeze. But I'll tell you what, it's beautiful out here. And, you know, a lot of people would kill for this view.
Yeah, the view is great. It's just a little swampy where we're sitting in this enclosed tent, stewing in our own filth. But, you know, we're here. It's a nice day out. Seahawks had practice day one. Kind of interesting walking in. First of all, I wasn't here last year. Nobody was. Well, I think you came a time or two, right?
I did. Yeah, we were all up on the burn.
But you had to have distance between you, and it was just, you know, last year was just like it almost didn't happen. So you fast forward to this year and today coming in, and you see all these people and you hear the music playing and all the people up on the berm, and it was just like, okay, this is almost normal again.
Almost, yeah. We had the tents set up. I did a little TV, and then, you know, we had an interview afterwards, and we had an interview on our show. I mean, it's just you get to actually see the players. Now they're, 10, 15 yards away.
Yeah, that yellow line right there is where they have to stand
behind. It's about a little more than a first down, Bob. About 12, 13 yards, yeah. So, and I know you guys talked to Will Dissly. We talked to Kerry Hyder. So, yeah, at least you're getting that. You're getting the fans. You had DJ Super Sam out here playing music. And so it's just – it's weird. It's like the whole last year just didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, so having everybody back here and, you know, one of the things that you think about with all of those fans, and they were – you know, it wasn't as packed as usual, but, you know, because they restricted the number of people that they let in, but – still, you could hear him screaming and yelling, and just makes you think, this is going to be so much better getting the fans back in the stands. For all of the plays that they made last year at Lumen Field, man, there were some really good moments, and just glad the fans are going to be able to get back to it.
Yeah, and we talked to Will Dissly, and I asked him about that, you know, just fan, what it was like playing without him, what's it like being here. So that conversation will come up at 6:45 today. John Clayton will join us at 6:30. But you said you had a chance to talk to Kerry Hyder, and that's what I was going to ask you, is just – some of the new faces around here, I mean, it's day one. There are no pads. There's no hitting for people wondering what it was like today. So, they were practicing, but it wasn't collisions. You weren't able to see, you know, how's the line look? How are they blocking? How are the tackles look? You know, it was a little different than that. But just your impressions of him talking to him, a new face around here.
Well, yeah, just him. And then, some of the battles that are going on out there. You're right. There were, you know, no pads. So they're just kind of – it was one of those practices where you learn how to practice. You know, they – go through their drills and stuff, because you'll do those things every single day. A lot of new faces, as you said. Yeah, Kerry Hyder was just really excited to be here. Said he'd always just been on the other side, a victim of the 12s.
Yeah.
So he was excited to get these guys behind him. And, you know, and that helps with the get off and the snap count and all that stuff, jumping off sides for offenses. So he was excited about that. The thing I really liked to learn was that he was a Michael Bennett fan.
Oh, really?
He grew up that kind of player, and that's the kind of player. And I actually kind of compared him to that. And I said, is that a guy that you looked up to? And he said, absolutely. Because, I mean, he's kind of an unusual player, and that he looks like he's kind of in between a little bit. But when he comes off the edge, he looks like a speed rusher. Mm-hmm. But when he works inside, you know, he's got good power and everything. So they have a few guys like that. It's just going to be interesting. I think we talked about it last Friday, and you were talking about getting, you know, three guys. If you can get, you know, 20, 22 sacks out of those three guys, right, whether it's Hyder, you know, Alton Smith is another interesting one that, you know, he was out here today. I don't think he was practicing. It didn't really matter whether you were practicing today, because Jamal didn't, Dwayne Brown didn't.
Yeah. Hey, but Jamal's here. We talked about that as well. And that to me represents positivity. I feel good that he's here, because it's, to me, means it's not adversarial. Maybe it gets there, who knows, but at this particular point, the fact that he is here and showing support, and we saw Bobby Wagner do the same thing, you know, be here talking to players but not participating in what's going on out on the field. I can appreciate that as a fan, understanding, yeah, he's got, you know, biggest contract of his life, and maybe the only one. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. you can't jeopardize that by saying, hey, I'm going to go and run around like a maniac out here and blow my knee out before I sign that deal.
Right. Well, and that's probably what Jamal Adams would do, run around like a maniac.
Yeah. Could he go at half speed? He doesn't seem like a guy who could dial it back.
Well, I mean, look, you look at dislocated two fingers. He had the groin injury. He had a shoulder injury. I mean, he was banged up last year. We never would have known that. But I think, you know, you mentioned, is there going to be animosity between him and the team? And him showing up, that's a good sign. But the other thing, I think people forget that when they, even before they traded for Jamal Adams, they were working out a deal in their heads of how we're going to have to handle this. This isn't some kind of a surprise to them. So I feel like it's going to be something that works out well for both of them, and they'll get it done. They've had plans to do this. And if they thought he was a guy that they couldn't sign and it would be this big battle, they probably wouldn't have traded for him. So that's, I think, something that we don't realize that these guys are doing far in advance. They're figuring those things out. But
do you think he played better or had more of an impact than they imagined, like in the number of sacks?
Good question.
We talked about him coming here, and we were all excited, and this guy's a special player. We knew he was special. But the number of sacks, and he didn't play 16 games, by the way.
Right.
So that was a little surprise. I didn't expect that. I thought, okay, maybe he gets 4 or 5. You know, they'll blitz him here and there. But
same.
You know, for him to come up with the number he did, and just seeing his energy, he was better than I anticipated. He gave more. He was more impactful than I thought.
Well, I remember after the first game in Atlanta, because I did get a chance to come out here and watch practices last year. I was really lucky to get to do that. Not very many people did. If you didn't know who he was, you would be asking the guy next to you, who's number 33? This guy's all over the place. I thought, okay, well, that's practice. It's like that in the game, too, in Atlanta. I mean, he just moves at a different pace. He's really good, understands angles, plays the run really well. Now, the thing he needs to work on is he does need to work on his ball skills. But
Is that just sitting in front of a jugs gun?
Well, maybe. Or just, you know, maybe it's a mentality. You know, I have to say, when I played, I just, you know, it was more about tackling. I wish I'd concentrated more on trying to punch the ball out. You know, the times that I got those fumbles, it was either I put my hat on the ball or the one that, you know, Lefko posted, I grabbed the guy's wristband, it ended up being, and pulled his wristband down, and that made him fumble. But I wasn't trying to come in and punch the ball away. And, you know, he has that in mind that he's going to get the ball. But yeah, he had some problems. I mean, the one that's most glaring, and I'm sure it eats him up, is the one against the Jets.
His former team, and it was just served
right
up for him.
There, yeah.
Right in the breadbasket.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe it does that, or it's just maybe a mentality, like I said, just going in with a mentality. Remember the defensive coordinator for the Washington State Cougars? I'm trying to remember. I think it was, is it Hinch? Is it A.J. Hinch, I think is his name. He tells his players.
I thought that was a pitcher. AJ, manager.
Finch?
Grinch?
Grinch, yes. That I think is it. Alex Grinch. That sprinkler's not coming this way, is it?
It's slowly.
Okay.
The mist is coming, which I welcome.
Yeah, I will take that.
Maybe the equipment won't, but I'm fine with it.
But his saying was, the ball doesn't know who it belongs to. So, you know, that, and I thought that was a great way to put it. Like, that's not their ball, man. That's your ball. You go get it. And if you have that kind of mentality, so maybe it's just that. Maybe his mentality needs to change. I'm sure he can catch the ball.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just a different mindset, I think, for him.
Don't you feel like he's a guy, much like free throw shooters that struggle in the NBA? In practice, they sit there and they practice and they hit 9 out of 10, or you know, they're hitting, you know, 30 out of 40, whatever it is. They're just killing it in practice. And I could see him probably at practice in front of a jugs gun, catching everything.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just game time that things change. If it's mental, if it's whatever it is. I just feel like he's one of those guys, if we watched him in practice and watched him in front of a jugs gun, he's probably catching everything.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and just, I think, for me, I know a lot of it was you were, you know, hitting guys and, you know, trying to hustle, and then all of a sudden, oh, there's the ball. Well, all of a sudden, you got to be a finesse guy. You know, you got to get your hands up and have soft hands and everything. I had frying pan hands from the NFL. A lot of things clanged off of my hands. But, you know, you're just so fired up and you're, you know, up in the box and you're playing. And I think he's more of that kind of player anyway. But, yeah, that's the kind of – you need to make a transition to, okay, now it's time to be finesse. And,
right.
You know, and that's where Bobby is so good. I say this all the time. Bobby was the linebacker I wanted to be. Yeah. I wanted to be a guy who had like 15, 20 interceptions in my career. Well, I had 3.
Yeah.
And really, I only caught 1. The other 2 were like popped up in the air, and I just
How many would you
fell
have had
in my
if
hands.
You had really good hands?
Probably.
Like, how many bounced off your hands?
I'd say another 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was more of a, I was a nickel linebacker for, I think, 2 years. But mostly, Bob, it was a battering ram, basically.
So, Dave, go run into something really hard.
Okay. So, yeah, that. Yeah, but as far as the mentality goes, I think that, and Pete Carroll and the way he coaches this team and everything, and I'm sure he's talking to Jamal about that, to, you know, to be a more complete player. Pete is an old defensive back coach himself, so he's really good. They're good at developing defensive players. Backs here in Seattle, so it'll be that'll be a big question mark with his play. But I mean, it's not like it's something that he's lacking.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is a fantastic player. I love the way he takes on blocks. Just personally, I think that is, it's almost like it's offensive to him that someone would try to block him.
Yeah,
and he treats them that way.
Very physical.
Yeah,
very physical. Now, is there any concern from you or even fans? You guys can text in 710-710. Their first overall pick, Eskridge, hurt.
Yeah.
He's not playing. He wasn't part of OTAs. He's dealing with a, what is it, a toe? Is it a toe or
I think so. Yeah.
But still dealing with it. Obviously, they're going to err on the side of caution. They're not, as we just said, they're not hitting. They're not preparing for a particular game at this moment. First practice, I get it. You're gonna go say on the safe route. But you're also talking about a guy who's a rookie. And we saw Rashad Penny go through this. And you really want to see guys get these reps and get these moments out here as rookies.
It bothers me. It does. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, he was hurt after the last. And you know, if it's something he can't help, you know, that. But still, I mean, it's concerning is what I should say, because, you know, that's why I didn't put him in my top 20, because he started off with this injury. It's really difficult for guys. Now, the good news is it's not like last year. You're going to get some preseason games. He's going to have more opportunities to become, you know, a not rookie,
yeah.
You know, I mean, to become a pro, to become a vet, and he's going to have more opportunities for that. But this takes away from it. And then, you know, how does he come back from that? Some guys don't respond very well. You know, Rashad Penny I think,
is a guy that didn't respond well to a thumb injury his rookie year.
Yeah. So, and, you know, and then he had times where he was brilliant. By the way, Pete Carroll mentioned him in his post game or post practice interview today, said he looked really good. He said he's down to 225. And then the other thing is, he said, you know, that could be a heck of a 1-2 punch with him and Carson. And I was like, I haven't really thought of it that way. I mean, I thought of it like he needs to get right and everything, and Carson's just going to be the one punch. I don't know if there's going to be a running back that, you know, gets 200, 300, 400, 500 yards. If that's the case, that'd be great, because they're kind of different, a little bit style. You know, Penny's definitely got some talent. The guy scored 52 touchdowns in college.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he just hasn't, we just haven't seen it from him. But yeah, with Eskridge, that does concern me that he's going to miss time, and then we just don't know what kind of player he's going to be coming off of an injury.
Yeah, and also I was going to call him Homer Travis, because you keep saying that. Travis Homer is also
don't let me get
the,
to you
on the pup list as well. Now, he's not a guy I look at and say, oh my goodness, what are they going to do without him? They're really relying on him. He feels like a complimentary piece that you bring in on third down, and he can catch a ball out of the backfield. He can run the ball, whatever. He's not a primary ball carrier. He's not a big part of what I think they're trying to do offensively.
He's a good blocker, good pass blocker, and I think he can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield. I saw a thing, by the way, it was an Instagram post or something, and he was squatting a ridiculous amount of weight.
Really?
And that's the thing about him, is he's known to be one of the stronger guys pound for pound.
He's not a big dude.
I was trying to calculate it, Bob. It looked like it was like between 450 and 500 pounds or something like that. So I was trying to do on-air math at the time, which is not good. I'm like, if those are 45s, then that's 90, and then 180, and then 360, and then there was another two or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a good battle. There's lots of really good stuff. This is why I love the preseason. I love camp. I love the preseason games. A lot of people don't. I don't know why, but there's so many battles that play out. The other thing is there going to be a Doug Baldwin? Is there going to be an undrafted free agent rookie? You know, a guy like Connor Weddington, or, you know, who's the guy? Greg Island, the big 6'8" guy from Mississippi State. You know, there are going to be some surprises that come out of this camp. John Radigan, I think, is the linebacker from Army. And there's lots of lots of good storylines, who's going to be the number three receiver, all that stuff. So that's just, you know, the first day, and we'll get into that as the camp goes along, and it'll be, you know, a little bit more obvious when they start practicing in pads and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's, I love this time of year. I'm just glad I'm not out there in pads, you know, hitting heads and sweating out there. We're just sweating here on the radio.
Yeah, we're just stewing here in the little tent. It is interesting that Pete said 1-2 punch with Carson and Penny, because I'm wondering if that's a little tell as to what this offense may look like. We have a new offensive coordinator. We don't know what it's going to look like. I think above any player, I'm more interested in just seeing, all right, how different does the offense look? Like, is it going to be dramatic? Are we all going to sit here as fans and go, whoa, they haven't really done that before. You don't see them do that very often in the past. Or is it going to be very subtle? Like, I don't think we really know what we're going to see. And again, I caution people who look at the Rams and go, well, look at what the Rams did. Well, he was not the offensive coordinator there.
Yeah.
That was, and maybe he wanted to do some things differently if he had been in charge there. Or maybe he'll duplicate it exactly. We just don't know, is my point. So that's what I'm most curious about above just any single player, is how different, if at all, is it going to look to us?
Yeah, same here. And, you know, by the way, in the camp where they were practicing their mini camp that they had a month or two ago, you did see some shifts out. And then, you know, a guy going in motion and then a running play with a crackback block. And so there's some value to that as far as upsetting the defense and, you know, pre-snap. But you have to execute it properly. You have to do it right, which is why it's a great year to come in and have a new offensive coordinator. Because if you were trying to do it last year with the limited practices and no preseason, it was going to be difficult.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you are going to see some of that now. Is it going to look exactly like the Rams offense? Probably not. But I just, you know, was saying today, like, if they can run that offense as smoothly as they did with Jared Goff, we certainly can do it with Russell Wilson. So,
your lack of respect for his ability is so funny.
Well, it's not even his ability. It's just that, you know, he just seemed like he was clueless a lot of times. But
you think,
again,
he's mentally compromised?
Seems like a nice guy, Bob. Seems like a nice guy.
Hey, before we get to What If Wednesday, our buddy Adam Ray, comedian extraordinaire, who's going to be in town next month, sent me a little note. It's his brother-in-law's birthday, who's a massive listener to our show. Goes by the name Dirtay.
Happy birthday, Dirtay.
He's a rapper, and his message is, you're the best dad an uncle could ask for. Thanks for only teaching my nephew a few of the cool curse words. happy you're in the fam. Love you so much. I got you a signed pic of Salk's glutes. So there you go. Happy birthday to one of our loyal listeners and Adam's brother-in-law, Dirtay. What If Wednesday? You ready for that?
Yes.
You want to do What If Wednesday?
Let's do that.
All right, let's just go. We don't have the thing. Just go into
like
it.
Isn't like a sound and opening and big voice guy?
What If Wednesday?
All right, I could do that.
Usually, can you do it?
Yeah,
come on, this is a professional radio show.
Right. Yeah, I'm slipping off my game. Here we go.
What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We've been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
What If Wednesday is presented by Hardwick and Pendergast personal injury attorneys. And the question is, what if the Mariners had not traded Kendall Graveman to the Astros?
Oh, I know this one. They'd have two less home runs. Toro hit one.
Would they have more wins? Could you argue there was a heavy, dark cloud hanging over this team and they were a bit flat to start things yesterday? Flexen got touched up. I don't know if it had anything. I think it's too easy just to go, oh, well, they were all bummed.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you read Ryan Diffish's article, they weren't just bummed. They were angry.
Really?
There was anger. There were words being thrown around in that clubhouse about feeling betrayed. Say, this is BS. This team is typical. I mean, this was poorly received, to say the very least, this move. And we can debate how good Toro's going to be and how good Graveman is going to be and what does it mean down the road, all that. But regardless of what I think, what the fans think, to me the concern is what do the players on that roster in that clubhouse think? And this did not go over well at all.
That's concerning. Because that's a part of this team. That's what's made them win these kinds of games, is that harmony in the clubhouse and the love for each other. And they talk about that all the time. And apparently there was a lot of love for Kendall Graveman. So, that's concerning. It's too bad. I hate seeing that. I mean, I just, again, I was saying yesterday, whatever it is that he is doing and he sees, it's a lot more than what we see and what we know. So it's his plan. I mean, we went through the other day. I remember all the – they had the little graphic en route with Kelnick and Rodriguez and Marte and I think it was it George Kirby, you know, talking about how they had actually moved up. And so they've just done a great job of, you know, building this good young farm system, and they've made a lot of good moves. And it's really disappointing to hear that. Like, I guess it kind of makes me a little bit angry because you just have fallen in love with this team and, you know, Dylan Moore and how much, you know, the celebrations and everything. So it kind of makes you mad, but kind of makes me sad too, man. Some of these guys, it seemed like, it sounds like that there was a lot of love for Kendall Graveman in that clubhouse.
Yeah, cut number one, here he is, Kendall Graveman, talking yesterday about just how tough it was because he felt like they were really on the verge of building something here.
For me, I told the guys over there, I feel like I'm a builder at nature. Not even in the game of baseball, just anything. I like to build something from the ground up and see it flourish, and I think that I've invested a lot of time over the year and a half to help Seattle get back to winning baseball in the atmosphere that was here the last 5 days. So in that aspect, it is a little bit, it's tough, the relationships that were built, to leave clubhouse staff and officers that I know in the bullpen. That's tough.
Yeah, it was.
So
I don't know how much of that you saw.
Choked up there.
He had tears coming down his face where he was talking. They said something about what was your message to the guys, and he was like, "I just told them I love them. I love those guys, and they know that." And he had tears coming down. And then you read Ryan Diffish's article where it said, you know, Marco was in there crying and had tears coming down. And this is, as much as people will be like, "Oh, these guys understand it's a business. This is what happens." You were coming off the highest of highs, this team has had in so many years. And this, it took 3 of 4 from the A's into the most improbable win over the Astros, and you couldn't have been feeling better or more excited. Our show started yesterday with text after text. You have to re-sign Jerry and Scott right now. They've got to be re-signed right now. By the end of our show, when this trade was announced, it was fire Jerry right now. He cannot come back. You've got to fire him right now. I mean, that's the kind of swing it was with the fan base, and I think that's what the clubhouse felt. And here, cut number two, Jared Kelnick talking about just the impact Graveman had on him.
You know, he's even a better person, and people don't get to see him on a day-to-day basis. But what he's done for, like, the younger guys, we have so many young guys in this clubhouse, what he's taught me, what he's taught the pitchers, is something you can't, like, ever repay, or you can't, like, see. It's not like a stat where you get to see that. And that's something that I think why everyone was so, like, down about losing someone like that was because – like, yeah, he's extremely talented and he helps us win games, but it's more what he does for us as a team.
That sounds like something that would be said by like a high school player or a college player. Yeah. That's how rare that is, that you have that kind of, you know, that kind of connection in the NFL or MLB, because everybody's getting paid. It's a business, all that. Like you said earlier, yeah, I know. Yeah, it's all business, everything. It's very rare that you're able to find that. So I sure hope whatever they do that they're able to replace that and get that feeling back. Because like you said, if guys are saying, I feel like I'm betrayed, I thought we had something good here. That's a tough. I feel like you've, as far as chemistry goes, you've taken a couple steps back.
Yeah, you wonder if Jerry on some level misread the room, not the trade. I'm sure he had a conviction about it. Obviously, he feels good about Toro. Maybe Toro turns into a brilliant player. We'll see. But just in terms of how it was going to affect the guys in that clubhouse, again, what I think, what you think, what the fans think, ultimately, yeah, they want the fan base there, but they're making decisions to put the best product on the field they can, and he thinks this move gets them closer. Okay, that's fine, but did you underestimate how the other guys on this roster were going to feel about that?
Right.
And it almost feels like, man, maybe you sort of underestimated that, or, you know, and fans can, again, look at it and go, why are they so upset? I don't get it. It doesn't matter why. They are. It just is. Whether we agree with it or not, that's how they feel. And in reading that article, I'm sitting there looking at this going, oh, this is not good, man. This is not good to hear guys say, throwing out these words of betrayal and typical and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, boy, that's not what you want to hear with a team that, you know, at that time was one game in back of the wild card. Now they're two games back after dropping two games to the Astros. So we'll see what it looks like, you know, at the end of the week when the trade deadline hits, how many more moves are made. And if there is a domino impact to this particular move, if this one makes sense with another move they make where we go, oh, okay, I get it now, or is this just a standalone trade that is one of many, and we go, okay, you made these other trades, but was that one necessary?
Well, what about, is there going to be a moment where his teammates say, oh, now I get it? I mean, that's even more important.
That's what matters. Yeah. Whether you and I get the aha moment means nothing to Jerry, nor should it. But the team, he's got to worry about the guys in that clubhouse and how they feel. All right, coming up, we'll turn our attention back to football. The Professor John Clayton will join us next as we continue live from the VMAC at Seahawks training camp. Done for the day, but resuming tomorrow. We'll talk to Clayton about what he saw out here as well. It's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody. Time to talk some football with the Professor John Clayton, who is with us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Good to see you today out in the sweltering heat.
Oh, it was brutal.
Yeah, I was giving John a hard time, Dave, because he was sitting here in the sun wearing a long sleeve sweatshirt. I was like, "Are you out of your mind? What is going on there?" But he made it home and he's here to discuss football with us.
I thought it was interesting that he decided to go pantsless though.
Yeah,
I mean, he had the long sleeve sweatshirt and no pants.
He made up for it. John, what stood out, if anything, today? What did you take away from today's practice?
I just think the quickness of the offense more than anything else. You know, the quickness of the running plays, the quickness of getting rid of the ball faster. I thought that was pretty fascinating. You know, so I thought that looked really good. I mean, and then of course the presence of seeing a little bit of Alden Smith, because now he's going to be able to practice at least till August 24th when he has his hearing. So I thought that was good. And I thought it was a good practice. Obviously, it was very hot and all that stuff. But it wasn't like there was a lot going on because it was a non-padded practice. I mean, you know, just, you know, more executing the plays, no blocking with the pads or anything of that nature. But I thought that looked good, and I think the speed of the defense certainly looks good.
Does that concern you that Eskridge, I guess just because, look, he's a different player than everybody else that's come through here. So it's not like just because it happened to other guys, but kind of happened to Penny. You know, we've seen that kind of thing happen. Does it concern you at all about him getting a slow start?
Not to a degree, yes, but not to a major degree. And the reason for that is that if you start to look at the the waiver wire and everything else, there's so many of these draft choices that start camp on the PUP or the NFI, so many of them. And that's, you know, part of it's because there were so few players that played the full season last year, some was on COVID-related opt-outs and things of that nature. But, you know, from what Pete Carroll said, now this obviously is a carryover from the minicamp in June. It's a toe injury, but he expects that, Eskridge should be there in a week. But that's why I think that you can see where the wisdom of John Snyder is to go ahead and say, look for a veteran wide receiver just to buy time for Eskridge, because, you know, they try to get D.D. Westbrook. I mean, he agreed to come out here, but then he goes to Minnesota with Keenan McCardle, his former wide receiver coach. And so I think they're going to continue to look to see if they can add. And obviously, if Josh Gordon comes off suspension, I think that would be the perfect one to buy time for Eskridge, because I think so many of these rookies, you know, with this last year being so strained with the pandemic in college, you know, need more time to be able to get ready.
How do you think they feel about Freddie Swain and Penny Hart and people like that, that, you know, and even Ursua? I know we keep bringing him up. I just, obviously there's something they're not seeing with him. Are these guys viable options, or do you think they need to go get that veteran, that Josh Gordon or whoever it may be?
I mean, the guy that they seem to like and the way that they're using him too is Penny Hart. And Pete Carroll said that right at the end of the minicamp, that he says, hey, remember, he was on the team last year, and he's fighting for something. And so I think Penny Hart is in the mix for the third receiver job. You know, Freddie Swain, I think they like. And the only problem with Ursua is that he's such a great slot wide receiver. But the problem is Tyler Lockett's one of the best in the league, so it doesn't get him on the field. So, you know, basically Ursua is more of the backup slot guy more than anything else, and that doesn't give him a lot of time to be able to go. It's kind of like if you're going to be the backup quarterback behind Brett Favre, or if you're going to be the backup quarterback behind Russell Wilson, you're hardly going to be able to get out on the field.
You mentioned Penny Hart. It's funny, when I always say this, when you when you talk to the players and you listen to them and a guy's name keeps coming up over and over and over again, then that means something. Yeah. And Penny Hart last year, that was a guy, I think, even defensive lineman, I want to say Carlos Dunlap, mentioned Penny Hart. So, yeah, he's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's just kind of what did you think about what Pete said about Rashad Penny? That was pretty encouraging. And he actually said 1-2 punch. And really, I mean, I just look at Chris Carson as a guy that you just need a one, not necessarily a two. But that was pretty encouraging what he had to say.
Yeah, because, again, as he's had enough time now to try to recover from the knee injury, and I'm sure he's tried to get in the best shape he possibly can, and he's a very talented guy. I mean, a former first-round pick and a guy that I think that can do some good things. And is he going to take carries away from Chris Carson? Probably not. But if he's available as a backup, I think that's going to be huge for this team.
How does DJ Dallas fit into things? I think we know Travis Homer is a guy who's not an every down back. He's more of a third down guy, could catch passes out of the backfield, what have you. But how does DJ Dallas figure in all this?
I think he's more of the passing down type of guy because he can catch the ball real well. He's got good speed. And I think that's where his fit is, where, Penny and Chris Carson are more, early down backs. And so I can see him coming in there. Now, as far as Travis Homer, I mean, he's starting the season on PUP. So it's like he's, I don't know how long he's going to be out. Doesn't seem to be any kind of serious injury or anything of that nature. But, I think that, you can see. But I'll tell you, the guy that also looked good today, and he looked good toward the end of the season, is Alex Collins. Yeah. Alex Collins made some nice runs today.
That's interesting.
All about him.
What's that?
Yeah.
You forget about him.
No doubt. I mean, you saw when he came out of college, and of course, Pat, my wife, really likes him a lot because she went to Arkansas for grad school, and he came out of Arkansas, and I mean, you can see that he was a good, powerful type of runner, and you saw that, and then of course, what he ended up doing is getting cut, and he goes to Baltimore, and he almost has a 1,000-yard season. So yeah. I think that he could be a factor, and that that could affect Travis Homer more than anything else. I don't think it's going to affect DJ Dallas, but I look at Alex as being a very good number three.
I thought you were going to say because Pat also enjoys to river dance.
No.
Lord of the Dance.
No.
Michael Flatley.
No, no.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
That was an interesting sort of how that went down, John, with Alex Collins, because when he came here his rookie year, I felt like I remember in that preseason thinking every time he got the ball, everything just went to hell. Like it was, somebody would blow a block. I mean, he just never really got a chance. Then he ended up fumbling. And then he goes off, like you said, gets 800-900. And then I think he got in some trouble, right?
Yeah, he did.
And he got in trouble, missed a season. Now he's back. And I thought he did look different at the end of last year. He just looked like maybe he's that guy. I think maybe it's just because we're back out here, John. But it seems like with that, the number three receiver, who's going to get more reps or more catches at tight end? I mean, it seems like more than ever, there's a lot of good questions that are going to be answered this preseason.
Yeah, no question about it. And that's the thing is that you need to get into the preseason games and things of that nature and also get deeper into camp. And, of course, I mean, and it's not just like the Seahawks, didn't have pads. I mean, I think the way this is set up, there's several days at the beginning of a training camp now with the new protocols that you don't put the pads on. So I don't know if it's going to be Saturday. I don't know if it's going to be Monday. But when the pads come on, that makes it even better because then you get to see where the offensive linemen are, and you also get to see, how plays are going to look once you start getting into the preseason games and the regular season.
All right, John, last one from me. Let's pick a player who you think most needs to have a really good training camp, really good preseason.
I'd say Akello Witherspoon, because, again, he's coming in as a challenger to get the starting job at the cornerback, the right cornerback position, the Richard Sherman position. So I'd say he's the one that needs to have a good training camp. I mean, he's talented enough to do it. He's tall. He's angular. He has the body type that they like. And so I would have to think that Witherspoon's got to be one of the ones that has to have a real good camp.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, there you go. There's John Clayton with us every day. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. We're going to talk some more football as we continue live here from the VMAC. Tight end Will Disley is going to join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. We get a chance to talk a little Seahawks with a man who represents the Seahawks better than anybody out there. I believe Dave Wyman has got a picture of him framed on his wall in his house. I'm talking about tight end Will Disley is with us. How are you, man?
I am doing great. It's good to be back out here running around.
Dave, you know. Dave's going to be really mad that he's not here to talk to you. He's the next tent over having to do other things.
He's doing big things, man. I'm sure I'm going to get to chat with him soon, you know.
How exciting is it for you just to be back and have it seem somewhat normal? I mean, you're standing, for people obviously they can't see, you're about 12, 15 feet away from me. But outside of that, you got fans here, you got the music going. Does it feel almost normal?
Yeah, we're close, man. It feels really good, you know, just to be back in Seattle, sun shining. So we're grateful for that. And then we're more grateful for these fans. You know, they showed out, they made a lot of noise. And I'm excited to get, you know, 60,000 plus in Lumen Field, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, what was last year like for you with, I mean, for everybody? We at home, we were getting crowd noise piped in, so it sounded like there was a crowd there. But you guys there, all you heard was your own players yelling and the other players. What was that like?
Yeah, I didn't even know they were doing that until the bye week. So that's kind of cool that they were able to kind of replicate that. But it was weird. I mean, our first game running out, it was kind of eerie. You know, I could still feel the, you know, the 12s and their noise and their energy. But then, you know, kind of by the end of the season, you just started missing it. You know, it was hard. You know, they bring a lot of energy. They bring a lot of noise. It's definitely a factor for us. And, you know, we're just ready to have them back, you know, a part of our team. And, you know, as an offensive player, it was nice. I mean, it was quiet. We went on the road. We played in some big-time, you know, opponents that have good fan bases. But there's no one like the 12s. You know, they're going to be so loud this year. They're going to come back with a vengeance. And we're just ready to put a show on for them.
Is that a situation where you're not even really totally aware of their impact until they're gone kind of thing? Like, when you go, did you have to sort of get yourself hyped up more than you normally would?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we feel them every time whether we're on the road and we're getting off the plane and we see them, you know, 12s are everywhere. And then obviously, like, game day, it's something special. And so we never take the 12s for granted. We're excited to have them back. And, you know, I just can't say enough about them.
So what was the offseason like for you, this one compared to last one? I mean, there's probably I would assume last offseason there were a lot of questions like, man, are we even going to play? How are we going to do training camp, all of that? What's the difference been between that and what you're doing now?
Yeah, no, I think it's still same. You know, how can we keep players safe, both from a football standpoint and then also, you know, at the tail end of this pandemic? So that's definitely a priority, you know, just making sure everyone's safe. A lot of our guys are vaccinated and, you know, still taking care, you know, wearing masks and social distancing and whatnot. So that's still a big factor this season. But I think at the same point, you know, we're ready to play football. That's our main focus and, you know, looking forward to playing again.
Now, well, you guys have a new offensive coordinator. So I know it's today's day one of practice, but you guys had OTAs before, and I'm sure you've been doing a lot of Zoom meetings. What's it like? I mean, how different is it? Is it a big learning curve? Are you like, is your head swimming, or does it seem kind of familiar? How's the new offense look?
Yeah, no, it's definitely refreshing to hear it, you know, for a second time. Obviously, I think OTAs was important, even if it was over Zoom, to just get that offense, get that verbiage. And now, you know, it's easier to communicate. We have all the verbiage in, and so, you know, while we're learning, our learning curve is a lot easier with all the information we have. It's kind of like, what did I miss round one? Round two, all right, I have all that nailed down, and we're just rolling now. So you can kind of tell, I mean, a lot of guys put in a lot of work, not just, you know, preparing physically, but they've been in their playbooks. We came out day one just smoking, ready to roll.
Do you feel like, because we hear from the experts who will talk about teams and, you know, what's going on with them, and they'll talk about the Seahawks offense and go, well, I could see the offense starting out slow because they're learning. They're not going to be totally dialed in with the offense. Is that a fair assessment, or do you feel like week one of the regular season you guys should be on point?
I mean, we don't really listen to outside noise. You know, we live in the Pacific Northwest where, you know, we just care about, you know, ourselves, our fans, our community. And, you know, so we're just going to focus on game one and being the best that we can be. You know, obviously it starts with our quarterback. Russ is back and we're rolling. He's looking sharp as ever. And then, you know, we know what we have in our room, our talent, you know, tight ends, receivers, running backs, you know, upgraded O-line, like we're ready to go. So, I mean, we're just excited to put it all together, new OC, you know, new season, let's go.
Hey, what was last season like for you? Because as I mentioned, Dave talks about you a lot. We talk about you a lot on the show, and we're looking at you going, okay, he's healthy. We're finally going to see Will Disley in a full season. You did play the entire season, yet it felt like even not just you, the tight end group as a whole, just didn't have a big part in the offense. I don't know if that scheme, I don't know if that was just the opponents taking you guys away, but I mean, you had 29 targets, 24 catches. It's a good ratio, but I thought, you know, 16 games of Will Dissly was going to be, you know, a big thing, and it just didn't pan out that way. How do you view last season?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year you got to take it with a grain of salt. I think, you know, as a room, you know, we did produce. I think if you put all three of our numbers together, Greg, myself, and Jacob Hollister, you know, we actually did quite a bit for our offense, and we did a lot of hidden stuff, you know. Yeah. We had a really good run game, and we pass protect, you know, really, really well, and we were able to create a lot of explosive plays, you know, for DK and Lockett, and it showed up. We were a really explosive offense. So, you know, going into year two, I think, you know, obviously Greg retiring, really, really happy for him, and Jake getting an opportunity in Buffalo. So, and then Gerald coming in, it's just a new opportunity for our room to kind of take over, take a role, and be more explosive, and, you know, maybe be a little bit selfish. You know, we're excited to get into Shane's offense and make an impact also, you know, in the pass game, run game, you know, and also protecting Russ. So there's a lot of hats that we wear. It's a lot of hats that I wear, and I'm excited to produce, you know, like we did those first 2 years.
Without divulging game plans or anything, does it just feel like the tight end group will be a bigger part of this offense?
I mean, that's our focus.
That's the way they'll call it.
Absolutely.
Well, and just as far as you go individually, I mean, injuries have been a problem the first couple of years. Did you feel 100% last year? Did it take a while for you to get to that point? How'd you feel physically throughout the season?
Yeah, I would say I felt, you know, good enough. We'll put it that way. Obviously, I'm never going to say I wasn't ready, but I think this year, you know, I can tell the difference that there's a lot more to, you know, my game, my explosiveness, and I'm feeling back. There's just a lot more confidence. And all the asymmetry's gone. There's no, wouldn't say I was limping, but there's definitely, you know, the strength back in both legs like I had, you know, back when I was in college days and I felt like I could run for days. So, just really grateful. You know, it's been a long journey. I've learned a ton about body maintenance and I've learned a ton about the game. And so I'm just excited to put it all together, you know, for one more year.
You know, it's talking to other athletes overcoming injuries and to a man, they talk about, yeah, you do rehab and that's, you hate it and it's painful, blah, blah, blah. But they said the biggest hurdle, it's not the physical, that it's the mental. It's trusting that, hey, I can plant, I can cut, I can, you know, I do have that explosion and I'm not going to re-injure myself. Was that the big hurdle for you, the mental part?
I would say more so than I thought. I honestly think I did a really good job of just stacking days and building confidence, but there is, you know, I just shows like I kept that attitude even after last season, right? So, you know, coming back from my Achilles, I took every day and I worked really, really hard to gain my confidence going into that season. And then I kept that same attitude coming out of that season. I worked really, really hard. And it just shows where my confidence was then and is now. And I'm not saying I was lacking then, but I definitely have more in my body right now, if that makes sense.
Last one before we let you go. Are UW going to be good this year? What do you think?
Always. Go Dawgs.
Always good.
I got that belief in them. You know, we're going to get some fans back. They're going to get that home field advantage. Jimmy Lake's about to take over.
All right. Well, good to catch up with you, man. We're pulling for you and can't wait to see what the season looks like. Thanks so much for coming by.
You. Thank you. Go Hawks.
All right. That does it for us. Our Seahawks training camp coverage is presented by Precore Home Fitness. Want to thank our guests today, John Clayton and Will Dissly, for joining us on the program. If you missed anything from today's show, all you need to do is go to 710sports.com, click that podcast tab, and scroll down to our picture and click on that, and you'll find everything you missed waiting for you right there each and every day. We will be back tomorrow joining you live from here, the VMAC, with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.